If you find yourself feeling like you're always the bridesmaid, but never the bride, or the bloke who struggles to make a relationship work, then maybe it's time to ask yourself if you're expecting too much magic from the significant other. Many people have set out to find the perfect partner only to be disappointed and hurt. But have they brought some of that pain on themselves by having unrealistic expectations? Tonight, my first guest has some good news and some bad news. First, the bad news. He reckons there's no such thing as the perfect partner. The good news, there are methods and strategies that you can use to build a rich and meaningful relationship. Dr. Russ Harris is an acceptance and commitment therapy trainer and author of Act With Love and The Happiness Trap as well. Welcome back.
Thanks, Danny. It's great to be back.
Russ, let's deal with the bad news first. There might be someone out there who reckons that they have found and still have the perfect partner. I mean, are they kidding themselves or are they just really, really lucky?
Probably in the very early stages of their relationship, Tony. You know, in that head over heels honeymoon phase, many people do think they found the perfect partner, the soulmate, you know, the knight in shining armor and so forth. But it doesn't last. You know, you're lucky if that phase lasts, you know, 2 or 3 years. Mm. Most people, it's less than that.
Yeah. You say in your book that popular myths about love set us up for a bit of a struggle with real life. Do you want to expand on that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, like romantic comedies and romantic movies, you know, the idea that there's some perfect partner out there. One of the biggest myths that people buy into is the idea that if you've got the right partner, your relationship should be easy. There should be no fighting, no struggling. Now, if you buy into that one, you're going to be struggling with reality big time. Another one of the myths that really gets people stuck is the idea that feelings of love should last and should be there all the time. And if you're not feeling madly in love, then there's something wrong. And those people will tend to be kind of serial short-term relationships because, of course, those kind of head over heels romantic feelings can't last forever. Emotions are like the weather; they change all the time. So I think those would be the kind of the big ones. But basically, you can put them all together and call it Mission Impossible to find this perfect partner, have this perfect relationship with no fighting, no struggle, blissful feelings of love. It just doesn't happen.
Mm. So if it's inevitable that the romantic stage is not going to last and the honeymoon will be over eventually, what takes the place of the feelings of bliss?
Well, I mean, it's been said so often it's a cliche, but, you know, relationships really do require hard work. What kind of follows if you can kind of stay together and work through all the difficulty and hurt and the pain and frustration, then you can have a very rich relationship that comes out of there where you actually see each other for who you really are, accept each other for who you really are. And acceptance, I would think, would have to be one of the fundamental pillars of a long-term relationship. If you can't accept your differences and your quirks and your flaws and your foibles, you're going to be in trouble.
And there are always, you know, sometimes week-to-week crises in relationships as well as, I had a look at the new Nicole Kidman movie, Rabbit Hole, tonight, and that looks at a relationship where they lose a child at 4. And they go into a therapy group and it drives her bats. You know, she just can't stand to even listen to other people, you know, talk of their trials and tribulations. And it's one of those things where, you know, if that sort of thing happens, it can actually destroy a relationship
Yeah, for sure. I mean, any kind of major life crisis is going to bring up painful emotions for both partners. And, you know, the key to making a relationship last is again, it's a cliche, but for good reason, to treat your partner like your best friend, you know, be there for them and support them. But also often what happens is when we get caught up in painful emotions, we do the opposite. You know, like you might start drinking or going out or blaming your partner or fighting or squabbling or withdrawing, all this sort of stuff that doesn't help. And when it comes to issues with children, disability or death, the divorce rates are phenomenally high because most people just don't know how to cope with that emotional pain.
I guess also previous generations lived under the principle of till death us do part if they got married, but it was also very difficult to get divorce in previous generations. You know, you had to go through the court processes, and it was very painful prior to about the mid-70s. It's one of those things where there are a lot of problems that can throw themselves up. You know, money obviously can be very tight. And that can be a major stumbling block.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's so easy to get divorced now, and so easy to live together and then kind of just, you know, move on when the going gets tough. And I think younger people are getting incredibly anxious about being married and seeing the divorce rates and looking at the financial implications of that. You know, there's kind of, in America, there's huge business in prenuptial agreements, and I believe that's starting to happen a little bit here in Australia too. So, you know, people are even going into long-term relationships with the belief that it's not going to last and it's all going to be difficult.
Yeah, well, I was only reading an article on a fairly well-known media proprietor the other day who's celebrating his 7th wedding, and it's just one of those things where you know, at times you know, relationships can be very rocky if you don't put plenty of time into them.
7th wedding, wow. Mm. Talk about optimism. My God. that's incredible. Look, you know, I don't want to point the finger, but it's very hard not to. There must be something going on there if you're on your 7th marriage. You know, it's time to have a look at yourself, I think.
Yeah. I mean, do often people make the same mistake? Serial offenders?
Very often they do, you know, and in fact the data on second marriages is that they have a much higher divorce rate than first marriages, because often people do leave their first marriage and they haven't really dealt with their issues. They haven't really dealt with the fundamental fact that if I want to make a relationship last, I really have to put in the hard yakka. I have to be able to manage my emotional pain and my disappointment and my anger and my anxiety. I need to be able to make room for those emotions and be there for my partner and do what it takes to build the relationship. Often people leave their marriage or their long-term relationship and they just leave in a kind of mode of blame. It's all my partner's to fault, it has nothing to do with me, and there's very little self-awareness or insight into how they've contributed to this. You know, we all contribute in some way to the issues in our relationships. And so then if there's very little self-awareness or insight, then of course you're going to repeat those mistakes next time around and next time around and next time around. So a big part in acceptance and commitment therapy is actually developing self-awareness, learning to use mindfulness to notice your habitual patterns of behavior and your way that you respond to your thoughts and feelings, and notice the way that your mind thinks and your beliefs and attitudes and assumptions and how they will influence you if you just automatically buy into them without stopping to reflect.
I've got to be very careful what I say here, but I am aware of one person who remarried, and I ran into the people about 2 or 3 years on, and I got to know the new partner, and it was almost identical to the first partner in not only looks but also in personality as well. It was sort of almost a repeat scenario. It was scary.
It's very, very common, isn't it? You know, I mean, there's all sorts of variants of that. There's the woman who repeatedly goes for kind of men that mistreat her in one way or another, or the man that repeatedly goes for women that mistreat him. You know, you get people that marry gambler after gambler after gambler, or adulterer after adulterer, or it's kind of, what's going on there? You know, we're obviously not learning from our past. Mm.
Russ, what about disagreements in relationships? Everybody has them. Some can be minor, others can end up to be screaming arguments that last for days and weeks and months. At some level, I guess all couples fight.
Yeah, and what, you know, makes the difference in a long-term relationship is fighting fairly. If you can fight in a manner where you can still, you know, be kind to your partner and be fair to your partner, and if you can be quick to repair after a fight, then that is kind of what determines the long-term success of a relationship. The world's top researcher on relationships is a guy called John Gottman, and he he sets up this Big Brother type laboratory where he films couples over a weekend and looks at their body language and the way they talk, and then follows them up for years and years and years, and he's able to accurately predict which couples are going to divorce and who's going to stay together. And one of his key findings is what he refers to as repair attempts. It's not actually the amount of fighting that you do in a relationship, but it's the amount of repair attempts that determines the long-term success. If you're quick to repair, which could be anything from saying I'm sorry to saying oh look, we've done it again, can we get back on track, could be rubbing your partner on the back, offering a cup of tea, anything that kind of is a form of reaching out and saying, look, I don't want this to be about fighting, can we make up here? The more you can give those repair attempts, the more rapidly you can repair the damage that's done. And one of the most destructive things is actually when a partner refuses to accept a repair attempt, when a partner gives you the cold shoulder or storms off or holds a grudge or says it's too late or I don't want to hear about it. That's incredibly destructive, because here your partner is making the effort to reach out and rebuild and you're just putting up the wall and saying no. So repair attempts, fighting fairly, and obviously in between the fights, really kind of building a good reservoir of good feelings in the relationship by caring and connecting and contributing to your partner. You know, that makes a big difference too.
Also, I guess one of the issues of 21st century relationships is time. Or lack thereof. You know, if you have a family, or you have both of you work, and you are, you know, trying to support a substantial mortgage and various other things that happen, time becomes very short. And if you allow the major relationship to suffer as a result of you not allocating time to it, that can be fatal too.
Yeah, look, absolutely. You know, I mean, gosh, just about everybody I know, including myself, is time poor, and it's really hard to get your priorities right. And this is especially so, obviously, when young kids come along, you know, and the kids take up so much time, and the relationship between the parents often suffers enormously. So it really is a question of making priority. You know, I work with a lot of couples, and often one of the first things we do is kind of allocate a day in the diary, not a whole day, but a date in the diary, which might be once a week or once every couple of weeks, where you just get time for the two of you, even if it's just 2 hours or 3 hours, to kind of have some sort of quality time together, whatever that means to the couple, and it's obviously very individual. And it's amazing how much resistance I often encounter to putting aside that 2 or 3 hours. Oh, we're so busy, we've got so much to do.
But it's often important to make a date with your partner. You know, in other words, assess, it doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, Saturday night dinner, but it needs to be, you know, a coffee and a walk or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Or it could just be a check-in. You know, we'll just have a heart-to-heart about the relationship over a glass of wine or something, you know. But that quality time on a regular basis is fundamental. Otherwise, you know, you grow apart, you get caught up in your own ways. And of course, the other big danger in long-term relationships is taking your partner for granted. It's almost like our mind paints a portrait of our partner, and as time goes on, we just see the portrait, which is kind of unchanging. We're not really, it's easy to fall into the trap of failing to pay attention to your partner and see how they're growing and developing, and how their attitudes and their beliefs and the way that they respond to life, the universe, and everything modifies and changes over time. We kind of easily get into the thought, oh, I know what my partner's thinking, I know what they're feeling, and you don't.
quite often, you know, in a relationship, you know, you assess where you were 15 years ago and you were probably a very different person. And you both got to be progressing, I guess, in the same style and the same rate.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and there's another thing to watch out for, too, is kind of a dredging up pain from the past. You know, that's a... I talk about exhuming the corpse, you know, kind of there's this bad thing happened 10 or 15 years ago and you buried the corpse and it's all kind of rotted away. But when the going gets rough, you kind of dig it up and you pull out this smelly old corpse and you say, you know, I remember that time that you didn't do X, Y, and Z, or you did this, that, and the other. And it's kind of just additional extra stuff to deal with that doesn't help. And you know, that's just one of many kind of unhelpful habits that couples often have.
Your book is based on what you describe as a revolutionary new development in human psychology, an approach known as acceptance and commitment therapy, or ACT. Can you tell us how it works?
Yeah, the name it reflects a key message: accept what is out of your control and commit to action that improves your life. And ACT is a scientifically based model, but it's actually got lots of parallels with a lot of ancient Eastern philosophy like Zen and Taoism and so forth. But it's really spread like wildfire throughout Australia in the last few years. It's been proven to be very effective with everything from depression and schizophrenia to drug addiction to quitting cigarettes to weight loss, and in the business world to kind of improve performance and improve sales. And in the sports world, you know, it seems really relevant to every area of human endeavor. ACT with Love, my book, is the first book written on applying ACT to relationship issues, to the common difficulties that we all have. You know, as I mentioned earlier, acceptance is such a key part of a long-term relationship. How do I handle my own kind of frustration or anger or anxiety in an effective way when it shows up in my relationship? And how do I take action to keep this relationship strong even when I don't feel loving, even when I feel resentful or angry? How can I act in a way that is... creates vitality and health in the relationship rather than draining it.
Russ, do you do this as an individual or you do it as a couple?
The book's written ideally to be used by couples, but also written in such a way that if your partner's not interested, which unfortunately does tend to happen quite often, particularly men, you can still unilaterally use these principles to work on the relationship. Because, you see, if you're all caught up in your own anger, frustration, hurt, disappointment, anxiety, and so forth, then you're going to be operating on automatic pilot, pushed around by your thoughts and feelings like a puppet on a string. And what ACT teaches you to do is how to step into mindfulness mode. You can be aware of your thoughts and feelings, but you can kind of let them flow through you a bit like you know, leaves floating down a stream without getting washed away by them or pushed around by them. And when you have that capacity to be in the present moment, to accept your feelings without getting overwhelmed by them, to kind of unhook yourself from all the unhelpful mind chatter that shows up when your relationship's not going too well, if you can get into that sort of present mindful state, then you've got a lot of control over your actions and you can sort of tap into your values. Ask yourself, what sort of partner do I want to be? What sort of relationship do I want to build? And what do I want to stand for in the face of this challenge?
I'm just wondering whether both people have to be involved in this, because I'm sure if one partner's proactive and the other's a little less than interested, it may not, you know, bear fruit.
Yeah, look, ideally both partners will be involved, but sometimes that's just not the way it works. And I rarely find that both partners are willing to put the same degree of effort into a relationship. But the point is, even unilaterally, if you are able to take... It's basically about focusing on what's in your control. The only thing you have control of in any relationship is yourself. And what you have most control of in yourself is your actions, far more control over your actions than over your thoughts and feelings. So it's kind of really about empowering yourself. Take control of your actions to build the best possible relationship you can. Now, if you're all caught up in anger and resentment, you're likely to be snapping at your partner, shouting at them, storming off, whatever it is that you do. That is not going to make the situation better. That's just going to make it worse. On the other hand, if you're able to make room for your anger and get present and tune into your values and kind of, don't try and kid yourself. Don't pretend you're not hurting, but take control of your actions and talk to your partner in a way that is respectful and fair, then you're likely to get a better outcome.
Is it important, Russ, to understand who you are?
I think it's essential. Yeah.
And that's half the battle, I think.
Yeah, look, absolutely. A big part of ACT is clarifying your values. By values, I mean your heart's deepest desires for how you want to behave as a human being, sort of qualities you want to bring to your behavior, the personal qualities you want to embody. And that is something that helps you clarify who you are and what you want to be in this relationship, and then using those values to guide your actions rather than letting yourself be pushed around by your feelings.
What about a sense of humor? we all claim to have a good one, and most people want their partner to have one. But what role does humor play in a relationship?
Oh, I think it plays an enormous role. You know, if we there's a Zen saying, the first sign of mental health is laughing at yourself. Mm. And that there was once a famous therapist called Milton Erickson who said, patients have grim enough lives. Let's not give them grim therapy too. It's one of the things I like about the ACT model is it has a sense of humor. One of the exercises I get people to do is kind of come up with funny names for the tactics they use to win arguments or the tactics they use to get the better of each other. And then kind of with a sense of humor, start noticing when you're using these tactics. When you thump your chest and put out your chin and talk in a loud voice, I call that, doing the silverback, being the big silverback gorilla, or like I mentioned before, exhuming the corpse. Or another tactic is, playing the lawyer. Men are particularly very good at this, where they kind of start getting all logical and rational and defining terms and saying, you say I never do that, but sometimes I do, which is kind of totally missing the point. Can we kind of have a sense of humor? Oh, there I go, using my tactics again. My wife coined the term pet arguments. We would have these pet arguments that we would kind of bring out and exercise on a regular basis. And we'd kind of, when we go away for the weekend, we'd say, she'd say, well, are we going to take the pet arguments with us or are we going to leave them behind? A sense of humor is very important.
What about let the sun go down on an argument? In other words, trying to resolve it before you hit the hay.
Yeah, nice if you can do it, but
not always possible.
Nah, look, some arguments go on for a long, long time. One partner wants a kid, the other partner doesn't. That's not going to get resolved overnight. Mm.
Are there some relationships that are beyond repair?
For sure. Part of the appendix of ACT with Love acknowledges that, and it's all about how to leave a relationship in the best possible way. I think it's important if you're going to leave a relationship to do everything you possibly can to save it. If you haven't really done everything possible, then you're likely to leave thinking, oh, maybe what if I tried this, what if I tried that, I didn't really give it a go. Whereas if you've really kind of put the maximum effort in, you can say, well, I did everything that I could and it just didn't work. We have to be realistic about that. Mm.
Dr. Russ Harris is an acceptance and commitment therapy trainer, author of ACT with Love and The Happiness Trap. Just wondering whether you'd like to join us tonight. We are talking about relationships and after that initial 2-3 year bloom, all of a sudden you can find the gloss has come off, the rose-coloured glasses are going grey, and sometimes it is a testing thing, particularly if you're short on time and big on a list of problems within the relationship. Perhaps you have found ways of dealing with it yourself that you would like to talk about tonight. Perhaps you are going through a period at the moment where you're in a relationship that could be better and that it's hit the rocks and it's really struggling. Perhaps you have been in a relationship and things have gone sour, and you're sort of grasping for straws, but just, you know, couldn't turn it round. We're talking tonight about relationships and there for the long term.
Tony Delroy's Nightlife. Nightlife, nightlife, nightlife.
About relationships tonight and keeping them fresh and active and working. Andrew, you actually had the unfortunate truck accident, but you've benefited from reading Russ Harris's books.
Yes, good evening, Tony and Dr. Harris.
Yeah.
I had a truck accident in 2009. There were 3 people killed in the accident. It wasn't my fault, but it doesn't make much difference to how you feel afterwards with the questions of what could I have done, what happened, why, all the things that you beat yourself up with. And my psychologist actually put me onto the books, Change Your Thinking, The Happiness Trap and The Confidence Gap. And I got a great benefit out of reading those books because I was getting snappy with people, with my wife, just out of frustration. And for all, I could sit back and look at it and say, I knew it was me being short, but I could not convince myself of a rational reason as to why. But with these books and with the therapies in the books, there was a sensational help.
Russ?
Oh, look, that's great to hear. I think you've kind of nailed one of the key things there, is that often our emotions don't respond to logic and to rationality. You know, rationally you can say, well, it wasn't my fault, but that doesn't stop all the kind of guilt and hurt and all of those painful emotions. We need to have other ways of dealing with them. It would be great if our emotions did respond to logic, but the logic center of the brain is evolved very recently, whereas the emotional part of the brain is much, much older and it's much more powerful.
Andrew, have you found a career again, and have you?
Yeah, I have actually, and a lot of it comes down to like being 6 foot tall and 120 kilos. I didn't want to admit that I had a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But by reading the books and actually accepting that you do have a shortcoming, then once you've accepted it, it's a lot easier to unhook yourself from the unhelpful thoughts and move through it. And I've recently been signed off as foster carers and new career, new everything.
Fantastic.
So, yeah, it was a great help. So to anyone listening who's umming and ahhing, nipping and butting, it is a really, really good thing to try.
Made a difference. Andrew, thanks so much. Mark, you turned to alcohol during your relationship breakdown. You're a little bit lost as far as getting yourself back on track.
Yes. Look, it wasn't me that's turned to alcohol. My partner's a heavy drinker.
Oh, yeah.
I do drink myself, but currently she's decided to choose her friends over myself. She's got a party at home. She's had them down for about 7 days. I work long hours, 12-hour days, 3 days a week. She chooses to drink with her friends instead of me. Luckily, I've got a boat. I'm currently on the boat in Sydney Harbour, and, I'm just at my wit's end what to do. The alcohol is number one. I've figured I'm on the list. I'm about number 7 on the list, and I just can't win. And here I am on a boat going, to do with this relationship. So,
yeah. Russ?
Just wondering where I stand in that regard. You know, what can I do? I can't. She just doesn't realise she's got a drinking problem. I've counted, here we go, 80 standard drinks in 1 week with the amount of casks of wine and nights out. I couldn't, you know, count the nights out, but I know when she came home she was pretty smashed. But, you know, 80 a week is incredible. And what am I to do?
Yeah, well, I mean, that just sounds very painful, stressful situation. And I would, before saying anything, just there's a quote by George Bernard Shaw, for every complex situation, there's an answer that's simple, clear, and wrong. And I'd be wary of any simplistic answers that you get to that dilemma. In Act With Love, I kind of go through the basic choices that you have. There's basically four choices. One is leave the relationship. And obviously, if it's if that's something to seriously consider. If you choose not to leave the relationship, and it seems that at this point you certainly haven't, then you're down to three choices. Choice two is stay in the relationship and change what can be changed. Do everything possible to improve it. And as I mentioned earlier, that means taking control of your actions. The only thing you have control over is your actions, your words, and what you say. The third choice is stay, accept what can't be changed, and live by your values. If you've done everything you possibly can to improve the relationship and you still choose to stay rather than leave, then you're going to have to do a lot of acceptance. Accept your disappointment. You're going to have thoughts in your head. I married the wrong person. This is too hard. You're going to have feelings of anger, hurt, anxiety, you know, sadness, loneliness. But you don't have to throw your life away. You can still live by your values, stand for something in the face of this, be the person you want to be. The fourth choice, I'll just go through the four options. The fourth choice is to stay in the relationship, give up trying, and do stuff that makes it worse. And we've all been there, we've all done that many times. There's no vitality. There's all sorts of things we can do if we choose to stay but give up trying and make it worse. We can turn to drugs or alcohol or punching the wall or, you know, kind of stressing all night long about how miserable we are. All of us have done this. I've certainly done that many times, but there's no vitality. There's no life in that choice. The only vitality comes from the first three choices: leave, stay and change what can be changed, or stay and accept what can't be changed and live by your values.
Look, that's fantastic advice. You know, I'm more sort of swinging towards the leave thing. I've tried everything in 8 years we've been together, and she's choosing number one, and I'm sort of number seven on the list. And
Mark, I've got to say, that level of drinking, it would have to be doing severe health issues longer term. I mean, has it already started to cause health issues and problems?
Yeah, she's gone to the doctor, and she's come out with a liver alcohol test that's quite good, and I'm surprised. But, you know, the brain functioning test, which she's never done, and I can just see that the brain is not working as well. She's not making good decisions. We're both public servants, but she can get away with doing the drinking she can do and going to work and doing it, but I can't. I can't afford to drink like that. I don't want to drink like that, and I'm controlling everything, and it's me controlling everything, and she's just sort of like, I give everything, and she takes everything into the nth degree, and I just don't know where to go from there, you know. I've tried, but...
Seven-day party is not a good look.
No, when I've got to work and I'm living on a boat just so I can get, you know, some sleep, I've got to start at 6 and I've got to be up at 4:30, and she's got friends around, you know, drinking till 4:30. So, you know, and, yeah.
It just sounds very, very difficult. I don't know what to do, and I'm just
writing points down, and that's all I can do, write notes and yeah.
Good luck with it, Mark. Thank you very much for the call. Claire, you're having problems communicating with your husband.
Yeah, hi, Russ. I was just thinking about your repair attempts, and for one reason or another, my husband and I get in 10-day arguments. And previously in the past, every night, I've been, you know, trying to resolve it, and now I'm at the point where I just let the 10 days go past. so he's going to come and resolve something with me. I'm wanting your opinion on what you say about that.
So you mean that he'll hold on to a grudge or something for 10 days?
Hold on to it. I have no option. Anything I say or do is wrong. And
okay.
I mean, I have young children and I don't want mess around the young children. So I don't try to inflame situations, but on the same note, sometimes I do, or he does, or we do, or whichever way you want to put it. But now I'm at the point where I just go, I can't be bothered. Wait the 10 days. And from what you were saying, it sounds like the repair therapy is a really bad thing. So I was wanting your opinion on that.
What I was saying is that the repair attempts are vital and of great importance. So the sooner that you can make a repair attempt, the better. And if a partner rejects repair attempts, if you're reaching out and you're doing something to try and repair and say, let's move on, let's get over this, I'm sorry, whatever it is, and your partner's rejecting it, that's very destructive.
Yeah.
So I'm still not 100% sure. Are you saying that your partner doesn't make any repair attempts? He waits 10 days and then he kind of does something. Is that what you're saying?
Previously, in the first 10 days, I've tried to make attempts every evening and it's just come to more arguments. So I stopped doing that.
I got you. Yeah, and so, you know, you're in a... basically in a very difficult situation. You're trying to repair, but the barriers are coming up from his side and he's not accepting that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's very destructive. I mean, what's that like for you to kind of, you know, be trying to do that and not getting anywhere?
I hate it. I abhor it. I find it very difficult. I end up getting angry not only... well, I don't get angry at him because there's basically no communication, but I get angry at the children, which... is wrong and frustrating, and I apologise to them and say I'm sorry. You know, Mum's just not happy at the moment, and that's a bad position to be in.
Yeah, so it's a kind of, you know, look, my heart goes out to you. It's such a common problem, and it's such a vicious cycle. Obviously, you're hurting. Obviously, you're not getting your needs met. Anger shows up, and then you're taking it out on the last people that you want to do it, and then your mind gets stuck into you and starts beating you up and laying the bad mother trip on you, and it just kind of snowballs. So, you know, what the first thing, the starting point is to start by developing a mindful space, you know, how you can just ground yourself, get present, acknowledge that you're hurting, acknowledge that you're angry, and just kind of get back in touch with reality. This is what I am. This is what I'm doing. What do I want to be about with my kids and as a mum? That's the first point before you even kind of go into the relationship.
I'm going, no, I can't get hurt by this. I can't.
Well, I wouldn't say I can't get hurt by this. I'd acknowledge that you are getting hurt by this, but be compassionate to yourself. Recognize, yeah, this really hurts. This is really painful. And what are some kind words you might say to yourself or some kind gestures you might do for yourself? Like, one thing that I often recommend is just to kind of, when you're really hurting, find the part of your body that's hurting the most. You know, most people tend to feel it either in their chest or their tummy or their jaws or their throat. And just kind of... this may sound corny, but I would really encourage you to try it. Just take a hand and imagine that your hand is the hand of somebody very kind and caring and compassionate, and place it on that part of your body that's hurting and just let it rest there gently and see if you can send some sort of feelings of kindness and compassion towards yourself. That would be a really good starting point because you're in so much pain and your mind's tendency to beat yourself up is just going to make that worse.
Mm. Thank you. I already wrote hand of kindness before you even said it.
Great.
Good on you, Claire. Thanks very much. I hope that helped a bit. Cal, you're having problems with the modern-day woman.
Yeah, guys. How are you going?
Good, Cal.
I've got a really loving wife, and you know, I've got three fantastic kids. And my wife's a fairly successful upper-class manager. And this has always been the way, and I've sort of, I work menial jobs, and so I yeah, I feel as I sort of I get kicked around a bit at work, and you know, and when I get home, I don't seem to have any power. My wife seems to take the role of the executive at home again, and you know, I just don't seem to have much of a say, and it seems to make me feel very insignificant, and you know, it just keeps building up and and you know, when I always turn out to be the bad guy because I kick and scream, I'm hypothetically basically kick and scream and sort of, you know, shout and say give me my turn sort of thing as the boss, and that's where I can't understand is my wife's got the high pressure all day every day as the boss, and that's where I say can we reverse the roles at home? I want to be the boss. I want to, well, not be the boss, but I want to have 50% control of the company at home, basically, and I don't seem to get it, and I seem to be the one that always stuffs up in the end because my wife doesn't see it, and as I try to draw her attention to it, I become the bad guy again, and I'm the shouter and the hollerer, and she's the calm one, and yeah, I see myself doing myself damage with my kids down the track because I'm going to be the one that loses out, and I just can't seem to get it right.
Russ?
Yeah, well, look, what you're describing is such a common pattern, you know, and it goes across both sexes. The way you're describing your own behavior there is kind of, if we can talk about passive aggressive and assertive, passive kind of is a bit like being a doormat. You bottle everything in and you let other people walk all over you. And aggressive is getting your needs met, but in a way that really kind of tramples on other people's needs. It's a bit like being a battering ram. And neither of those is very good for a relationship, whereas assertiveness means kind of respecting your own needs and desires while also respecting the needs of the other person. And, you know, if you're wanting to improve things in the relationship, it really has to come from a place of assertive discussion. And a very good strategy is to make a time to go outside the house, go for a walk in the park, or actually a coffee at a cafe or something is really good, and talk about these issues in a really kind of calm, respectful way that respects yourself and respects your partner. Having the conversation in a cafe is a very good way of helping you both to kind of stay calm and collected.
Carl, unfortunately, I have to leave it there. And Russ, thank you so much for being there tonight. Dr. Russ Harris, the author of Act With Love and The Happiness Trap. And we'll catch you again soon.